It's time for In Process, conversations about business in the 21st century with Evelyn Ashley and John Monahan, presented by Trusted Counsel, a corporate and intellectual property law firm. For more information, visit trusted-counsel.com. And now, with In Process, here are Evelyn Ashley and John Monahan.
Hello, and welcome to In Process, conversations about business in the 21st century, presented by Trusted Counsel, a corporate and intellectual property law firm. I'm John Monahan.
And I'm Evelyn Ashley.
And we are partners in Trusted Counsel. Our topic for today is the art of conversation in the digital age. So Evelyn, I think this is a really important conversation because the way we're communicating these days is really a lot through technology.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know I'm all about this conversation. This is one I've wanted to have for a long time.
Right.
I absolutely believe that technology is often negatively affecting the way that human beings interact with each other.
And I'm guilty of it myself. I pull out my cell phone all the time. I'm checking my email at home. I'm on the iPad checking football scores. So I think today's conversation about how to best use technology to communicate and how it's affecting our society, I think it's going to add a lot of insight.
I think it is. I mean, you know, the reality is technology is brilliant. You know, being able to have a conversation and say, what was the name of that movie? Let me put in some keywords and, you know, it pops up. Or I didn't really know anything about the history of that. And you can actually enhance a conversation because you actually have reference materials immediately available or whatever.
Right.
I think the challenge is, particularly in business, the reliance on email and technology to take the place of a conversation or a face-to-face meeting where you can actually build a relationship in order to achieve your goals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think we'll be digging into a lot of that about not only its effect sort of on society as a whole, but how it affects business issues as well, and how you might be able to solve things better through technology or not, you know, as well through technology.
And we have some great guests for that.
Yeah. So we're thrilled to have two guests today that can give great insight into effective communication in the digital age. Elaine Rosenblum is the founder of ProformU. Elaine teaches collaborative communication and negotiation skills not only to professionals at all levels, but also to budding professionals, including students preparing for college and job interviews. Across careers as an entrepreneur, attorney, teacher, and marketer, Elaine acquired deep experience working at and consulting for corporate organizations from startups to Wall Street. At the intersection of advancing technology and diminishing human contact, Elaine combines her corporate and legal expertise to realize her vision that collaborative communication techniques are among the most valuable professional skills and that expectations for productivity and profit margins demand them. Jody Fleissig is Senior Vice President of Media Strategy and Relations for Porter Novelli. Jody spent 10 years as a senior executive producer and supervisor at CNN. She was in the control room during the 9/11 terrorist attacks and guided the network's live global coverage during the first 8 hours of the crisis. She was named 2012 Media Professional of the Year, awarded by the Bulldog Reporter. She has also won 5 Television Emmy Awards and is an acclaimed network television senior executive producer and supervisor. Jody has been a TV, radio, and newspaper journalist for more than 20 years and has a successful track record of achieving measurable results in fast-paced, pressured environments. She provides clients with experienced counsel in strategy creation, crisis issue communications, message development, e-communications, executive media training, and multimedia campaigns. She's based in Atlanta and provides network leadership to Porter Novelli offices around the world. Elaine and Jody, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us,
yeah,
John.
Thank you.
And Evelyn.
as you can tell, John really loves the bios.
They're easier to read when I'm not looking straight at the microphone. So thanks for joining us. I mean, one thing that I wanted to start off the conversation with is just a really broad question. I mean, the way today's technologies are, we have such control of our communications. We get to curate what we're going to put online, what we're going to type this email. I mean, how's that affecting the way that we communicate with each other these days?
Well, I think that what people do is they present maybe a false self, and that has raised the standard in the way people think they have to present themselves. And I think what that has caused in terms of the quality of communication is that people have felt like they need to present a false self, and that lack of trust that comes from the false self is a problem. Mm. Yeah. And Jody, what do you think of that?
Well, I think that technology is a tool. Mm-hmm. I go around the country teaching CEOs and C-suites and middle managers how to communicate with other people in their offices, with television reporters, with print reporters. And I think the most important thing that you have to sell is yourself. And the best way to do that is to connect with people through chemistry. Mm-hmm. And you can tell so much about a person when you meet them. I think you use technology as a tool to further that relationship. I don't think one substitutes for the other. Right. Because we all came in here and we got to know each other and we got the chemistry warmed up and, you know, we're going to have a great conversation. But when I walk into a room, whether it's I'm asking for a raise, mm-hmm. and I'm doing it myself, or I'm trying to teach others, I need to spend the first 15 minutes of that conversation warming that person up and getting the energy going and developing that trust.
Right.
And then from there, you can use the technology to enhance what you're doing. And I would also say to put your own personality in your technology and in the emails that you write or you post on Facebook or Twitter, because you need to break out from the clutter.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. But I do think that Elaine raises a really valid point that there is this... there's this thing that's happening where people actually think they need to present themselves as something more or bigger than mm-hmm. who they actually are, which is, you know,
this false. It's almost a false self. And I think when people present false selves, of course, people believe some of it. But I think that people know in their heart, they may not be able to articulate it, but they know on some level that it is a false self. And then it makes them less likely to risk themselves. And then that goes to trust. And trust is where you build relationships. And that's actually where creativity and innovation come from.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I once read an article, I can't quote which one, but it said that there's a direct correlation between how many selfies someone takes and their level of depression. So people who are taking a lot of selfies are actually very depressed. You'd think they would be very confident because they're always taking pictures of themselves. Mm. It's quite the opposite because they're always looking for affirmation. That's why they're constantly posting selfies.
It's almost like Pavlov's dogs or the levers and the mice.
Right.
It's people are looking actually for a hit. And mm-hmm. I don't have the actual numbers, but the level of anxiety and depression in the United States mm-hmm. has gone up significantly, I think in the world probably. And then, as we talked about before, the level of conflict, mm-hmm. which speaks to a lot of what I talk to people about conflict resolution, is that the level of conflict has gone up significantly. We don't have to look far to notice that.
Well, and that's a really interesting point because we face this all the time in what we do at the firm working with clients. People have they see everything as a difficult undertaking. It's a difficult conversation. Any concept of conflict means, oh my God, I'm going to avoid that situation rather than trying to resolve through communication. Mm-hmm. In my mind, it typically needs to be delivered in, you know, what I would call a human-based communication, as opposed to using email or anything else to communicate.
Well, you can use technology. It can be very efficient and very effective. I think where you have to be careful is word choice. And I think our default word choice, and especially because we move so fast, tends to be extreme and judgmental. We are inundated with judgmental comments and from movies, media, television. We have talking heads screaming at each other on TV. And then our default becomes judgmental. And if you can just neutralize that language, and that's what I work a lot with people on, is how to shift from the judgmental to the neutral so you can get into an uncomfortable conversation or an easy conversation.
And I also think nuance is really important. I was telling Elaine this morning, so my stepson went to Alabama, and he comes home with a bunch of kids on a Friday night, and I text him, how many kids are you coming home with and what time? Why do I want to know? Because I need to know how much to cook and what time to have dinner on the table. And he's like, what? Is she judging how many kids I'm bringing home? And I want to go out and party. I'm like, I picked up the phone, and I said, hey, I just want to know how much food to cook. And he's laughing. You have to be really careful about what you say and how to say it. I got an email the other day from a client, and it almost sounded like the questions that they were asking, it was either like just friendly questions or a witch hunt. You pick up the phone and you say, hey, can you just explain to me what you're looking for in a very warm tone and say, hey, tell me what you're looking for and I'd love to help.
Yeah. I'm not exactly sure what you're trying to say in this email. Maybe you could explain it to
and
me.
And your tone on the phone in person is the key, because you can't be defensive or confrontational. You're just very open.
Well, we got to take a break. When we get back, we will discuss a little bit more about why people don't pick up the phone.
And now, back to In Process, conversations about business in the 21st century with Evelyn Ashley and John Monahan. For more information, visit trusted-counsel.com.
Welcome back. When we left off, we were talking a little bit about just picking up the phone and having a conversation, because there's so much in technology that can be lost in translation and interpretation. So just pick up the phone and get to the root of it. And, you know, a lot of this stuff can be put to bed. But there's a real fear today among some people who use technology all the time about communicating in that way. It's very spontaneous, and you don't have control over your message. I mean, is that something you guys are encountering a lot?
Well, I'm seeing it a lot with young people in preparing for interviews. They really struggle with a face-to-face conversation or a phone conversation. Their default is to text. Or the other thing I'm seeing is that when they need to write an email, even as something as simple as a cover letter, they don't know the way in. They're not used to having a real conversation. They're used to having snippets. And so their default is text. They do not want to speak on the phone because, you know, conversation via face-to-face or on a phone is a muscle and you have to work it. And they have never really exercised their muscle. It's almost like they have an atrophy muscle for phone and face-to-face conversation.
You said something about you don't have control of the message. You absolutely have control of the message. And I have dealt with people who are really nervous and have anxiety, and they could be a CEO of a major company, and they're just not built for public speaking. I have people who could sit like me and just talk to the wall for hours. You know, you just have no inhibitions sometimes. But the thing that I teach everybody is, whether we work really hard to get you that interview, when you get that interview, you are in control. It doesn't matter what somebody asks you. It's what you want to push out. And it's the first 5 minutes of a conversation where you get out what you want to say.
Right.
And if you, I teach people when I do media training, you come up with three key messages. And in the first 5 minutes, you push those out and it's a win. So if you're in a conversation with somebody young, I mean, they may not know how to deal with it, but everybody needs to learn. You are in control. Like Elaine and I said before we came in here, what are the three things we want your listeners to walk out with?
So Jody, what are your three things? And then I'll tell you mine.
My three things are, I think the most important thing is that you are in control, and that you should limit the number of messages to 3 points so that you're very succinct, because you don't want to overtalk and you don't want to undertalk, but you want to hit it. And you have to practice. Practice. Just because you're brilliant in science doesn't mean you're great in English. Just because you're a great CEO in subject X doesn't mean you're a good communicator. You have to learn how to communicate, whether it's asking for a raise or appearing on a radio show or speaking to the board or just speaking to people on your team. You need to develop those skills of, you don't have to turn into an extrovert, but you need to have the confidence to say what you mean.
Well, and before you get to yours, though, Elaine, do you see that often the disconnect between taking the time to prepare and think through what I want to say, how I would like it to sound, is the issue, because technology has this immediacy of tick, 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 send. Without a lot of potential, you know, thinking about what's going on.
I will get to my three things, but there's a dopamine issue there. Mm-hmm. It is, you really are wanting to take it in and get that hit back and forth, mm-hmm. and you want the drug. That's what the selfies are all about, mm-hmm. that we were talking about. Mm-hmm. But I want to go back to my three things because Jody got to say her.
Absolutely.
She's see that?
But as soon as she put me on the spot, I, in my head, said, okay, you are in control. Take a breath. Think about what you want to say and own the moment. Yeah. See, I have to do it myself.
Yeah. Right. So
my friend's putting me on the spot here, by the way.
And now I'm going to own the moment. So I teach people to have professional conversations, and that can look like a college interview, a job interview. It can be in the context of conflict resolution. It could be a salary negotiation, or it could be just negotiating a big deal. And all of that takes intentional, strategic conversation. And I like to think of the type of conversations that I like to teach people to have are collaborative conversations rooted in, I use a lot of mediation technique. I use some marketing principles. And if you can, especially in a technology-oriented culture, if you can shift from the judgmental to the neutral and use your words very, very carefully, you will separate yourself out from the crowd. People will notice you because you are using your words in a very thoughtful way. And most people today, unfortunately, because we're moving at the speed of light and reacting to our dopamine, are not being thoughtful about their word choice.
Can you give me an example of judgmental versus neutral?
The simplest example I can think of is if you're at work and somebody barges into your office and says, you are late, you have missed the deadline, you have put us in a horrible position. And the responder says, why are you so angry at me? That is the judgmental response. The way to de-escalate that situation is to say, I guess you have some concerns. Can you tell me more about that? And I might say that because it buys me more time. Sometimes I've been, you know, if somebody comes in and yells at you, it throws you off your game. And you need a little time. You need to buy some time to think. So I would say, what are your concerns? Or tell me more about that. Or I wasn't aware of that deadline. Tell me what in your mind, what is the deadline? Mm-hmm. So that you get you de-escalate the judgmental language, and you engage in a conversation. And like you said before, you ask questions. Mm. You start by asking questions so that you can bring the conversation down a bit.
Diffuse it. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. That's the exact word I'm looking for.
So I want to ask you about technology and the use of it and the value of not being connected all the time to technology. I mean, is it good to have some alone time, put the phone away? Are there sacred places?
We were just talking about this.
Big believers in sacred time.
First of all, I'm one of these people who I don't let phones or my kids at the dinner table. No computers at the dinner table. No, not in restaurants, not in the car. I think you really have to isolate and have some family time. I also think that I get 90,000 emails and texts and phone calls a day, and I'm always on. And at the end of the day, I'm not one of these people who sits in bed and goes, I'm not a big social media person for personal use. I do my Facebook and I find out what's happening, but I need to turn it off. Mm-hmm. I need my brain to recharge. The same way you charge your cell phone, I need to charge my brain. I need to breathe. And I think everybody does. I don't think... When we used to sit in a car and daydream, or you're in the shower, or you're driving to work, you need downtime where you're not always working, just to let the great ideas bubble up and to have a conversation with the people you love. I think the rudest thing in the whole world is being with your kids and having them think that the phone or a box or a TV is more important than they are. Mm-hmm. What do they learn from that?
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. I also think that, you know, what that has caused for us particularly is without that clients will often think that big concepts and strategy shoots out of your head, that we can just get on the phone and you're going to tell me the answers, you know, this is what I hire you for, right? Mm-hmm. And there's sometimes a challenge of, well, let me understand first what we're talking about, and let me understand what we're trying to achieve. And maybe I need to have a little while to step away from this and think about it, because mm-hmm. it's going to provide you with a greater benefit. But, you know, that whole immediacy thing, again, is it gets in the way sometimes.
Yeah, the immediate gratification.
Well, and the news business, you're on 24/7. And if you're dealing with the media, everybody expects you to be watching TV and reading every newspaper and being online 24/7.
Yeah. I know that sometimes.
Come on, Jody, you must be. Come on.
I used to be.
Even I feel the need sometimes to respond when I see the email, and so I want to. You know,
it's your dopamine talking to you.
I'm like, I really want to respond to this email, but then I think to myself, I really don't have a great response to this email yet. I got to think about it. And it might come to me a day later. I mean, usually I'll say, well, I'll think about it. And maybe a day later, the idea might hit me. I mean, recently I remember I had a big breakthrough over the weekend because I finally got some downtime. Like you were saying, Jody, I got some downtime. I got to sleep. And then I just woke up with the idea. It's like, there it is. Mm-hmm. But if you are constantly responding, you're probably not responding with your best information.
I think the best thing to do is to set your boundaries. I think it's all about boundaries with you, your family, your kids, your work. I think you pick time to look through your LinkedIn, to read your Facebook, to look through your Twitter, to see how your business messages are out there, if that's where you want to go. And you're always thinking, but I do think there's a time to turn it off.
And well, I also think
we're going, well, let's just pause there for 1 second, and we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to continue this conversation.
And now, back to In Process, conversations about business in the 21st century with Evelyn Ashley and John Monahan. For more information, visit trusted-counsel.com.
Welcome back to In Process. We're here with Elaine Rosenblum and Jody Fleissig. And right before we went to break, Elaine, you were signaling that you had one more thought that you wanted to add on the value of thinking time.
And right? Well, if you think about it, we live in a knowledge-based economy, mm-hmm. and that means that everything that we need to know, we really can find on a computer. So hiring organizations today are really looking for people who can use what you can find on a computer and collaborate in groups and create in groups, and that goes to innovation. Mm-hmm. And I think you really can't be creative and innovative unless, well, you need trust first, which we talked about before, but then you also need downtime. Mm-hmm. And I think some of your greatest ideas come when you're doing something else. Like if you sit down and try to think of an idea, it's very difficult. But if you're brushing your teeth or you're in the shower, you know, that's where the great ideas might stem from. So what I do in my bathroom is when I'm brushing my teeth, I always keep a whiteboard marker in my bathroom. And when I come up with a great idea, I write it on my mirror. So if you came into my bathroom right now, you would think it was that movie, A Beautiful Mind, where the guy writes on the window. I look like a crazy person, but in fact, it's where all of my ideas. It's how I strategize on my business. It's how I help solve my clients' problems.
I think that's a terrific idea because there's lots of times that, you know, you're not in a convenient place to get a piece of paper or you're writing it down and you will lose the idea.
Okay, sure. But now let's bring in technology because if you take your iPhone and you're driving and you're not supposed to text, mm-hmm. you push that little notepad thing and on the way to work, I sit there and
now
say, Jody, this mm-hmm. is Jody. These are some of the things that I want you to think about today. And I go A, B, C, D. And then I get back to my office and it's the same as writing, except I'm driving.
That's right. Awesome. Wow.
But some people do need to write. I would much rather write than dictate. And that's why I need my whiteboard marker.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm a horrible dictator. I've never been
it's
good
not dictate it. It's just kind of like brainstorming out loud just so I don't lose the thoughts, mm-hmm. you know,
so you can
follow up with it later.
But I think a lot of people because of technology really struggle with having coming up with problem solving mm-hmm. and creative ideas.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a real struggle there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it also leads to the challenges of, because as you know, we also recorded a session recently on negotiation strategies. And I think the idea that you can't take the time to think through thoroughly what it is that you're trying to get to and how you could get there, creates a challenge. And that's, you know, technology does not really support that unless you're being conscious of
you know what my favorite way to respond to that, Evelyn, is I say, I need some digestion time with that. Let me digest that and I will get back to you. And I often say that when people are concerned that they might stumble in an interview or a presentation. And Jody and I were talking about this before, that you can say, you know what, I need to take a second to think about that, or give me a few minutes and I'll get back to you on that. I just want to spend some time digesting it. It's a little harder in Jody's case when she's coaching somebody for TV.
Well, what I tell them to say is punt. I mean, kick the ball to somebody else. If you really don't know the answer, then the best thing is to be honest. Say, you know what? That's a great question, but I don't know the answer. I'd love to get one of my experts, and can they call you back by 2 o'clock, or can they call you back in an hour?
Yeah.
Or
tell
me when your deadline is, because I'd much rather give you the right answer than, you know.
Rather than just, you know, BSing you, essentially. I think this is important. Yesterday, I was doing a performance review for someone in our office, and internally, at least, he has a skill, as we'll call it, of enhancing the facts. And, you know, for someone who has dealt with people and interactions for all of her career, 30-something years, it's not that difficult to pick someone out and say, you are enhancing the facts too much. If you don't know the answer, tell me you don't know the answer. And, you know, this is a millennial who believes that he needs to know everything.
Yes.
And so I actually said to him, you know, years ago, I actually had asked a lawyer, before I was a lawyer, a question about a provision in a contract. And he clearly did not know the answer. He spent 10 minutes talking to me, talking, on and on and on. We were all over the world. And at the end of it, I said to him, if you didn't know the answer, I wish you had just said, I'll have to get back to you. And it, of course, mortified him. Mm-hmm. But it tells you so much about someone that they're not comfortable enough even to say, let me go check that. Let me get back
to you. Well,
that
goes to courage and maturity. And I often have to deal with that in terms of younger people when I'm coaching them for job interviewing or salary negotiations. They are concerned with having to admit that they don't know something. And so when I tell them, when they get stumped in an interview, it's okay. You're a human being. It's fine to say, you know what? I don't know the answer to that question, but I'm going to find out, and I'm going to get back to you by 4 o'clock today. And I tell them, you better get back to them at 4 o'clock that day, because that's an opportunity to build credibility
right.
with the person and build a bridge and show them how you're going to treat customers and clients.
Right. So this is a good segue, because actually we did a show the other day on millennials, and it was interesting because one of the people on there was talking about things that they teach them. And it was basic things that probably our fathers or mothers would have taught us, such as make eye contact, shake hands. And certainly people still do that. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there's some do's and don'ts to being a great personal communicator. And since both of you teach people how to communicate effectively all the time, I mean, what are some of your tips to presenting yourself and communicating effectively face-to-face?
I would say the first thing is eye contact is key. Mm-hmm. Put your phone down, put it in your purse, put it in your backpack. Focus on that person. I mean, Bill Clinton does it the best, and he's just the role model.
Absolutely.
And make that person feel like they are the only person in the room. When you shake hands, doesn't have to be a really strong handshake, but a lot of times I'll shake with both hands just to be warm. I try to be warm. Body language is a very big deal, to be open. And just be a really good listener and make that person feel important.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. I went 2 weeks ago to L.A. because I had an opportunity to do a shoot with Katie Couric for Yahoo with a client of ours. And it was on the front page of the website yesterday. It was great. Not Impossible Labs.
Oh, cool.
Give a little call out. They're a nonprofit that does amazing things for people who need extra help. To make a long story short, I flew out there because I wanted to meet Katie Couric. I had worked with her previously, but I wanted to shake her hand. I wanted to tell her a little bit about myself, and because if I need to pitch a story to her in the future, I want my name to be not one of the thousands of people she knows.
Yeah. Right.
I will follow that up with an email, and we tweeted about the story yesterday. But you want to connect. Mm-hmm. You know, you can do all the technology you want, but when the C-suite people, or when you're having a meeting with someone and it's important, whether it's personal or professional, it's in person. Mm-hmm. You've got to have these skills.
And you've got to have eye contact. You have to have that in-person eye contact. I think you can build a relationship on the phone, but I think the way to solidify a relationship is you have to have an in-person conversation with that person. I mean, that's the whole purpose of interviewing. If we were going to just hire people over the phone, we wouldn't bother to have an in-person interview.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think that is very, very important. And I think being able to articulate what you want to say with specificity is very, very important. I find with a lot of young people, again, they struggle with, they speak in generalities, mm-hmm. and they struggle with explaining a concept or proving a point. They'll say, well, I'm a really friendly person. Well, tell me why you're a friendly person. Or even a seasoned executive in my office yesterday said, you know, well, I'm really good at what I do. And I said, well, prove it to me. Tell me how you're, tell me a story. Actually, interviewing is about storytelling. Tell me a story about something that you did really well that proves the point that you are good at what you do.
Mm-hmm. I have to jump in for a quick second. I just want to say that Katie Couric made me feel like $1 million. She probably knows the entire world, but in the 5 minutes that we spent together, she was holding my hand, she was looking into my eyes, she made me feel like there was nothing else going on, and I'm like, gosh, this woman is a great communicator.
I love you.
Yeah, and you always hear about that about from the very good communicators. Like Bill Clinton supposedly has an unnatural ability or an uncanny ability of connecting with people.
But I think we can all do it if we care enough about it to put the emphasis on it.
But you have to be careful as a young person, as a millennial going out and to the professional world. You have to be careful. Sometimes they ask me if you should shake with two hands. Now, Jody can get away with that. She's a seasoned executive, but somebody who is in their 30s may not be able to pull that off. Right. So you've got to be careful. It's a judgment call. Yeah. Right, exactly. You got to have the credibility to be able to pull it off.
I don't think I can pull it off. Well, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll discuss more about some communication skills and scenarios.
And now, back to In Process, conversations about business in the 21st century with Evelyn Ashley and John Monahan. For more information, visit trusted-counsel.com.
Welcome back. We're here with Elaine Rosenblum of ProformU and Jody Fleischik of Porter Novelli, talking about the art of conversation and the challenges that technology have delivered to it. So when we broke, we were actually talking about the listening skills being so important in good interactions for important experiences that we all have, and I wonder how do you help someone learn to not be so nervous about an experience that they actually can be a good listener and relax in a situation?
So there are a few things that I tell people. The first thing is that you want to get yourself, before you enter the situation, in a zone. Okay, you want to kind of step away from the action and the activity. You want to put your phone down. And the same way you'd step to the side and just think for 5 or 10 minutes and get yourself, like before you took a test in college, you looked at your notes. You just want to kind of close your eyes and get yourself there, and don't let people distract you. Get yourself in that safe place where you are. The second thing I would say is you want to encounter that situation enough times so that you become good at it. Mm. The first or second time you're going to go in and speak to a boss or do a speech, you're naturally going to be nervous. But if you keep putting yourself in those situations proactively, you're going to get better because your nerves going away. I mean, I remember playing softball, or my kids play baseball. The first time you get up to bat, you're so intimidated by everything, you don't even think about what you're doing. By the 15th time you're up there, you know, you're swinging away and, you know, you're smacking the ball out of the park. Mm-hmm. You need to practice. A lot of times I tell executives or people to walk around the kitchen with a spoon and make me believe that this is a microphone and just talk. Tell me what you're going to say, because I want to make them self-conscious mm-hmm. of hearing themselves mm-hmm. and of walking around and of knowing that they're on. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like that outer body experience. You're sitting here talking, but there's someone above you listening, and you just need to practice and put yourself in that odd spot enough times so then when you're really in it, it's a lot more comfortable. And it's going to take time. It mm-hmm. really is.
Yeah. I actually, when I'm teaching people to interview, it's the exact same thing. It's muscle memory. I mean, if you think about it, when you watch athletes on the Olympics, you see them walking around with their earbuds in their ears and they're not talking to anybody. They're getting in the zone, Jody's talking about. And when I'm prepping people for interviews or for a negotiation, a salary negotiation, we go over it and over it, and I ask them questions that are difficult. I throw them off their game. I don't want them to be surprised. And we build the muscle. So on game day, you walk in that room and you're like, I've done this a million times. It's easy. It's comfortable. You know exactly what's going to come at you. I love it when my students who are doing college interviewing call me and they go, how'd you know what they were going to ask? I go, well, there's only a certain amount of questions.
When I do media training, I bring a camera and I physically do 2 to 3 interviews. And I hit him with the easiest questions, and then I hit him with the worst questions. And one of my first questions is, what keeps you up at night? What are the tough questions that mm-hmm. you think you're going to trip up on? And then we do those questions over and mm-hmm. over and over again. Mm-hmm. And I think actually one of the keys is that I teach people, internalize, don't memorize. I have this big deck, and I said, if the lights went out and the electricity went out in the building, I could stand here for 4 hours and tell you exactly what you would need to know with no help, because it's part of who I am. Mm-hmm. When you go out there representing your company or yourself, it's who you are. Mm-hmm. And it's not black and white, it's gray. So you have to be able to handle any question however it comes at you. You don't want to memorize an answer, because if the question comes at a different angle than how you memorized it, you're going to get it thrown off.
You have to own who you are. And that's why I like storytelling for interviewing, because it is who you are. It's your experience. And that's why lying and not telling the truth is so difficult, because it's not who you are. And when you're being authentic, people can smell and feel it. And that's where trust is built.
And the other thing, going back to the very first thing she said, mm-hmm. when we're talking about a false self, in technology, social media is so transparent, you get busted so fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the biggest problems that brands and companies have. They put something out there, it doesn't work with the public, they take it back. You have to be yourself and you have to be honest, otherwise you're putting a target on your forehead.
It's transparent, but people don't realize that it's transparent. So you've got to think about it from both angles. And
I think that's true. I think the whole idea of journalism now, and mm-hmm. how one thinks of journalists as being unbiased sources, but what we know now is the big media organizations are completely biased.
No, they're not.
Okay, well,
maybe this isn't going to be another conversation. Understanding of
so
who your audience
of them.
Is.
Well, absolutely, and maybe that's it.
Some playing of them are and some of them aren't.
Playing to an audience, absolutely. I would agree with that.
Right, know who your audience is.
But, you know, certainly what we would think of as being the popular newscasts certainly do present their limited political views to get the right response from an audience. And I think that it just plays into the fact that we have turned into a soundbite nation, And hasn't technology actually inspired that in a lot of respects?
I actually just saw something on Facebook that was your five words that are your best piece of advice, and mine was choose your words very carefully.
Absolutely.
You have to be thoughtful, and to have a knee-jerk reaction to, and I'm holding my phone in my hand, is a dangerous proposition.
Mm-hmm. Another reason why the phone is sometimes good. Everything you send in electronic form stays forever for forwarding purposes. You never know where it might come up again.
Exactly. That's yes. I know I have family members where I've seen my my sister or my brother-in-law basically educate their child on, don't do that on social media. Do not talk about that. People look at these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, when people are interviewing, I have to tell them about scrubbing their social media. People have no concept of the fact that even if you put your privacy settings in place, doesn't mean you're protected.
Right.
When I interview people at Porter Novelli, I always look at their Facebook and their Twitter page to see if this is the kind of person we want representing our company.
Right.
And when my stepdaughter graduated college, I'm like, girlfriend, you better look at what you wrote. And I told her all through college, you know, I know you think this is fun, but people like me are going to be looking at what people like you say and deciding if we want to hire you.
Right.
Yeah. Especially in your industry. Yeah. I mean, it shows it's doubly important.
Yeah. You know? Right. I have a student who's getting his MBA at Columbia, and I went on his Facebook page, and there was nothing really wrong with anything on his Facebook page. There were just a lot of pictures of him without his shirt on. and I just said, I don't even care if you're interviewing in the tech world and they don't care. I think we need to take them down. He struggled with that.
So one thing that I wanted to talk about is a specific scenario, because we sort of, when we did the pre-call on this, we talked about the value of communication in the way that people, some things aren't best said in an email, right? And one thing I wanted to ask you about is we've all had situations in life or professionally where you just have to say, sorry, you know what? The result wasn't what we wanted, or I'm sorry, screwed up. I mean, what's the best way to deliver sincere apologies?
Jody, I'm going to let you speak and then I'll follow up.
I think you, either in person or on the phone, not via email, if it's a big one especially, you say, you know what? I made a mistake. I'm so sorry for the inconvenience and the trouble that it caused you. I think you fess up. I think you gain a whole new level of respect. I think you show that you're human. I think you show that you're part of the team. But if you don't, it is a disaster in the making.
Mm-hmm. If you do it over email, do you think it has any, or you think it's not going to work?
Well, you know
it
what?
It depends on the level of apology warranted.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you were late to a meeting, you could send an email that says,
sorry, I'm
apologize.
Late, I got held up.
Right. Yeah. I think a text or an email is fine in that situation. I think when the stakes are high, or you have done something that where you have wronged someone else,
mm-hmm.
or caused them a lot of anxiety or grief, then you have to A, take responsibility for whatever it was you did. Mm-hmm. You have to take ownership of it. And that goes to what Jody was talking about in terms of respect. And you have to give a sincere apology. I'm sorry you feel that way is a very shallow apology. And people love it.
Yes.
That's one of their favorites.
I know.
You have to say, I did something wrong, and I apologize. I was disrespectful to you, and this is how I'm going to change in the future.
I think that's a good tip, actually. My mother is still angry at somebody over the "I'm sorry you took it that way" apology. so it rings true.
It's detrimental to relationships.
So we'd like to say thank you to our wonderful guests, Elaine and Jody. Thank you so much for
our
joining
pleasure.
Us.
Thank you.
If you'd like to learn more about Elaine Rosenblum and ProForm U, you can visit their website at www.proformu.com. If you'd like to learn more about Jody Fleissig and Porter Novelli, please visit their website, www.porternovelli.com.
We hope you enjoyed In Process today. If you have any questions on the topic today, please reach out to info@trusted-counsel.com. And if you are interested in learning more about us, please visit our website at www.trusted-counsel.com, where you will also find a listing of our past and upcoming shows. Thank you for joining us.
See you next time.
This has been In Process, conversations about business in the 21st century with Evelyn Ashley and John Monahan. Presented by Trusted Counsel, a corporate and intellectual property law firm. For more information, visit trusted-counsel.com. In Process with Evelyn Ashley and John Monahan, Wednesdays at noon on News Talk 1160, The Talk of the Town.